That place was awesome. Even I'm intimidated by the wilderness.
So onwards. Gathered up in Canada are about 8,000 British and German soldiers who had arrived with Burgoyne to alleviate the siege of Quebec in 1776 and remained throughout the winter. They're all pretty intimidated or awestruck by the scenery, but ready to head toward Ticonderoga.
Now, why were the Germans here anyways?
Well, there was no Germany yet, just these provinces. You remember the diary of Surgeon Julius Wasmus? Well, he and most of all the Germans in Canada were from a place called Brunswick, which is now in the German state of Lower Saxony.
Brunswick?
Yeah. The British couldn't pronounce it either, so they called it Brunswick. Many of these German states were connected to Britain by blood, religion, or previous alliance. These small nations were the little guys and needed powerful Britain as allies. You remember how Burgoyne thought that a war in Europe could break out at any time, right? And the Germans were also feeling the financial strain from fighting in the Seven Years' War.
So the British and the Brunswickers formed an alliance.
It was more than just an alliance. Britain's King George III was the brother-in-law of Prince Charles William Ferdinand of Brunswick, also known as Prince Karl.
Meaning Prince Karl was married to King George's sister?
Exactly. King George and Prince Karl brokered a deal for Prince Karl to provide about 4,000 troops to help put down the rebellion in its American colonies.
You mean Britain hired 4,000 mercenaries?
No. These men were more like modern-day UN peacekeepers. They were really foreign warriors fighting in a distant land, paid little more than their regular wages, and little to gain from the outcome of this war. The oath they swore to the king is quite interesting. You can find it on the website.
It also says here that the commander was, how you pronounce his name?
General Baron Frederick Adolf Riedesel. What's it say about him?
Baron Riedesel was born to a noble family that had been around since the 12th century. His landholding were over 7 square miles, and there were about 20,000 people living there. Wow, like he's a mayor of a pretty good-sized city. He fought in Europe during the Seven Years' War, became a respected leader, and was promoted to general when he was given orders to come to America.
Does it say anything about his wife?
Gustava, my eldest daughter, was 4 years and 9 months old. Frederica, my second, 2 years, and Caroline, my youngest child, just 10 weeks old. I had therefore need of all my courage and all my tenderness to keep me from relinquishing my unprecedented wish to follow my husband.
Wait, Grandpa, who is that?
That was his wife, the Baroness Frederica Riedesel. She crossed the ocean to follow her husband in this campaign, with her 3 kids, the youngest just 10 weeks old.
3 kids? And one was just 10 weeks old? That's crazy!
Uh-huh. That lady had some pluck.
Pluck?
Well, just listen.
I had been told not only the perils of the sea, but once we were on land, that we were in danger of being eaten by savages, and that the people in America lived upon horse flesh and cats. Yet all of this frightened me less than the thought of going into a country where I could not understand the language. However, I was prepared for everything, and the thought of following my husband and of doing my duty has kept me in good spirits during my whole journey.
Sounds like she was up for an adventure.
Riedesel was among the Germans that had arrived in 1776 and spent the winter in Canada. Delays kept the Baroness from joining her husband before the onset of winter. No traveling when the waterways were all frozen and Canada inaccessible. She had to wait until the spring to join her husband.
Oh, so everyone's basically sitting on a block of ice for a couple of months. When does Burgoyne arrive to take command of his army?
Why, springtime, of course. Burgoyne's convoy to Quebec arrived on May 6, 1777. His ship was the first to arrive once the river thawed. Carleton followed orders to provide Burgoyne whatever was needed for his campaign. Burgoyne spent the next month preparing to depart. His troops were stationed at various towns between Quebec and Lake Champlain, moving troops over turbulent waters, narrow rivers, and muddy roads to Cumberland Head on Lake Champlain. Here these guys formed a huge line with British Major General Simon Fraser in front, Burgoyne in the middle, and Riedesel with the Germans in the rear. They were all together on Lake Champlain, and once they got to open water, the troops were escorted by the larger ships assembled there.
How did these ships get here in the first place? Did they build them all on Lake Champlain?
Burgoyne had quite the flotilla made up of all kinds of ships, many of which had been used in the previous year's campaign. The largest was the Royal Savage, which had been built on Lake Champlain. The Thunderer, that had actually been built by the French, sunk by the Americans, and reconstructed by the British as a floating battery to haul supplies. Several of the ships had all been disassembled and carried over land to be reassembled on Lake Champlain.
That's a lot of work. This war involved a lot of stuff I never even thought about.
Other ships had been salvaged from Benedict Arnold's armada that was damaged at the Battle of Valcourt. Can you imagine having your own ships used against you? So by June, Burgoyne and his army are off.
But what about the Baroness? Has she caught up with her husband yet?
Well, Riedesel wrote this to the Baroness.
General Burgoyne arrived here from England and brought me the good news that when he left, you were on the point of setting out. I have expected you for the last 4 weeks with the greatest impatience, and am now obliged to set out from here without having had the joy of seeing you, a circumstance which grieves me inexpressibly.
Aw, they miss each other.
Well, actually, they did finally catch up before Riedesel left Canada. Here's more from the Baroness's diary.
We again set out in 3 calèches, which are a kind of light chaise or carriole. Very small and uncomfortable, but very fast. As our calèches were open and very small, I bound my second daughter, Frederica, fast in one corner. I took the youngest, little Caroline, on my lap, while my oldest, Gustava, sat between my feet on my purse. I knew that if I would reach my husband, I had no time to lose, as he was constantly on the march. At every place through which I passed, the peasants greeted me, treating me with great affection. Especially was I rejoiced to see my husband so beloved on every hand, and to have them all say to me, "Oh, how delighted he will be! How often he has talked about you! Oh, how he loves you!"
She survived a harrowing canoe trip and got to land.
My children and my faithful Roquel kept a constant watch on the high road, that they might bring me news of my husband's arrival. Finally, I saw from a distance a calèche stop still.
They saw a man dressed in Canadian garb get out.
I saw the Canadian get out, come nearer, and fold the children in his arms. It was my husband.
He had been so ill, he was barely recognizable. But he was on the mend, and would only have a short 2-day visit with his family before he left for the rendezvous point on Lake Champlain.
I guess the Baroness showed up just in time. She sure does have some pluck. Is it common for women to join an expedition?
Sure, there are all kinds of women here. There were officers' wives, laundresses, bakers, seamstresses.